Good afternoon and welcome to Central Coast Voices, a program addressing the ramifications of change and how today's choices will affect tomorrow's community. This program is an extension and production of Action for Healthy Communities and provided in collaboration with KCBX. It's made possible through the underwriting of Joan Gellard Sargent, and I'm your host, Chris Kington Barker. Social media, love it or hate it, it's here to stay, and it has a significant impact on all our lives. As a parent, it's become one more concern for and about our children in this country. Today, we'll be talking about the importance of parent awareness, involvement, and parenting our kids about social media. My guest for today's show, if I can continue to talk here, is they are Eileen Calandro, owner of Calandro Consulting, Leah Payne Scott, Masters in Public Health, Social and Behavioral Health Educator, and Brandy Swain. You're not Swain. A swine.
No,
you're a Swain. You're not definitely a Swain. Crime Prevention Specialist with the San Luis Obispo Sheriff's Office. Today's show is live, as you can tell from all the flubs, and we'll welcome you to join our discussion with your thoughts, concerns, maybe share your experience and questions by calling us at 805-781-3875. Once more, 805-781-3875. And welcome to all of you. Let me see how many more names I can slaughter during this.
Thanks for having us.
So why don't we start off? You guys presented such great information and questions when we were asking you for what we're going to be talking about today. And this topic really is something that I notice all the time with more and more kids being absolutely glued. Yep. And we're not talking about just teenagers here.
No.
So I'm gonna go ahead and start over with you here.
Okay.
Okay. And so what, you know, when we're talking about social media and its impact on our children, how large is that really? And really, how involved should parents be?
Parents need to be really involved in order to make sure that their kids are being safe and making good choices. Where parents have a hard time with that is they think they don't know enough about it.
Well, and they might not.
Yeah. So they feel that kids know more about the technology and about what they're doing, so they just feel that they'll let the kids take care of it. But we don't let kids have keys to a car without training them and making sure that they're following mm-hmm. rules, and we set up boundaries for them, and law enforcement sets mm-hmm. up boundaries as well.
Yeah.
And we make sure all of that's in place before we put them into that car. And social media needs to be exactly the same.
Yeah. And you know, I think one of the things that you talked on at the beginning or alluded to is the fact that parents may feel stupid or
yes.
uneducated about it.
Right.
And so we're probably not going to get, you know, not every parent is going to get up to speed or be able to. I mean, I look at my granddaughter who's 23
yes.
and the way that she can text.
Sure.
And I do one fingered texting. She thinks I'm hysterical.
You know. We all get to provide entertainment sometimes for
absolutely.
Our kids, right?
She
grandkids or
I'm
whatever.
Sure. Absolutely. A
sure.
hoot.
Yeah.
But I'm baffled by her. But at the same time, it's really important to know what you can know. And mm-hmm. there are some ways that you can do that, correct?
Absolutely.
Yes. And yeah. one, you brought up a great point about laughing. And
yeah.
I think that can bring in some connection. If you can laugh at yourself and show your ability to not take yourself too seriously, maybe that can open up a discussion that actually is really serious.
Yeah.
And I also tell parents that, back to the cars, I love cars, by the way. So I bring things back to cars whenever I possibly can. But one thing that I tell parents is that we get into cars, we turn the key or you push the button and it all turns on and we just expect it to go.
Right.
And most of the time, you know, knock on wood, it will. But when it doesn't, if it goes wrong, you take it to a professional. You don't know every single thing, but you get in the car and you drive it.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to know every single thing about technology, right. but you have to follow and expect and create boundaries around it so your kids can be safe.
Yeah.
They don't have to know you don't have to know how the car works. Your kids don't even know how the car works, but they have to follow the rules for it.
Yeah. Exactly.
One thing I would also point out is that when I do parent night presentations for different schools, one element that I always talk to parents about is the fact that our kids are passionate about teaching their parents. Mm-hmm. It's a rare opportunity that kids get to enlighten their parents right. on a topic that they're not very familiar with. So if you as a parent or a guardian or a teacher can just say, hey, I hear about this popular new app. Tell me a little more about it. And as they start to expand, it allows that conversation like, well, do you get to talk to other people that you don't know? And then that can lead down a conversation of, you know, talking to strangers online and, you know, setting up those expectations of, you know, mommy needs to know who it is that you're talking to. Mm-hmm. And I want to make sure if you don't know them personally, this is not somebody I want you communicating with. Mm-hmm. And then ask them other things like, do your friends do this? And then get into that conversation. And it really provides several avenues for you to kind of just pick up a conversation. Because understanding the technology is not the importance, it's the conversation that you have.
Mm-hmm.
So as a parent or a guardian, you know, one thing we all have in common is you kind of become a little investigator into their lives.
Right.
So if you can ask the right questions and pick up on the red flags and the warning signs, that's going to really provide that educational moment. It's not about, well, how do I use this texting or how do I use this social media platform? It's, I'm a little concerned about this behavior. I'm a little concerned about how you're engaging and interacting with other people. Let's talk about what is appropriate, what's inappropriate, and what my expectation is of you as a parent.
Do you guys have the sense that parents do any kind of education or set any kind of boundaries naturally before they give the phone over to a kid?
Oh, that is such a great question. And I think the trend, from what I see, I think the trend is changing. I think it used to be just, okay, you have a phone, here
right.
you go. But I think there's much more conversation and techniques even of how to parent your kids in that arena and make sure that they're safe. So I'm seeing the trend that parents are establishing boundaries and working things out from the beginning instead of figuring it out as they go along. And I think that's a really good trend.
Let's talk about if in a great environment, if we were to have let's restart with kids getting phones.
Mm-hmm.
What would you have parents do before they hand a phone to a kid?
I think the first question is, what's the reason that my child needs this phone?
Great.
It's a great,
great question.
Right?
That's exactly what I'd ask parents. Mm-hmm. Good job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Keep going.
So I don't know. I think that it's easy to look around and see all the other children that have phones.
Right.
And the ways in which the phone would make life easier. Like I'm picking my child up at middle school and every other child is able to communicate with his or her parent about where they are in the parking lot. But is that the reason to give the phone?
Right.
So I don't know if Eileen and Brandy
have anything
to add. I would say, kind of leading off what you were saying, is that you weigh out the balance in the significance of it, because the second you hand it over as a parent, you have to ask yourself these questions. Am I okay, or is it appropriate for them to have it when I know they're most likely going to be exposed to inappropriate material, violent or pornographic, sexual nature, that there's that potential for engaging with online predators, online bullying, sexting, or even revealing too much stuff inadvertently personal about themselves.
Right.
So when you weigh that out and you look at your child and you look at their level of maturity, because you can't put an age on it, because every age has a different, you know, a different nature and sense of how they handle things and how they absorb information from a parent and whether or not they're willing to take on these recommendations for their safety. So really, you look at the maturity of your child and determine based off that, is this person ready to be exposed to this? And do I believe that they have the character fostered in them to make smart choices based on when they're exposed to this? Not if, but when they are.
So we have a caller who has a question for Eileen. Tessa, are you there?
Yes.
Hi, you have a question for Eileen?
Yes.
Okay,
I was wondering what a good age is to get your child their first cell phone.
The question you're asking is the most popular question I get at every single parenting class that I teach.
Nice.
And
I would imagine.
Yes. And Brandy just touched on it really well. And Leah did too, that the first thing I check back with for the parents is, why are you getting that phone for your child? Why do they want it, or why do you feel they need it? And a lot of times parents will say, well, they feel like they're left out. Mm-hmm. And I say, try again. Because if that's the reason why you want to put that device into your child's hand, it's not the reason that's going to be the best one for them.
Safe.
It's not going to keep them safe. Right. And when they're feeling left out of something, that kind of shows their hand a little bit, mm-hmm. of they're left out of what, and what's going on that they feel like they have to be a part of. So in my family, my boys don't get, I have three boys. They're 19, 15, and 13. My 19-year-old and 15-year-old both got phones when they went off to high school. And neither of them complained that they didn't have one in junior high. My youngest son, I think he just knows. Like, don't even bother to ask, because mm-hmm. it's not going to happen. So it's a different age for every family. And also, I tell families to examine, do you feel like your child has to have a smartphone, the best of the best? Are they getting a hand-me-down phone? If they're getting a hand-me-down phone, that can have some complications that go along with it. Who's paying for the plan? Is the child going to be, you know, I mean, all of these different questions, right. instead of just handing it over and turning it on with every single capability. Mm-hmm. Sometimes what you really just want a phone for is you want to have that pickup mm-hmm. communication of, ooh, I'm going to be a little bit late, or, oh, plans have changed, you need to get picked up from someone else. That doesn't necessarily have to be the smartphone.
Right.
That is more technology right. than what we use to
There's
put people on the
moon. There's other ways of communicating.
Right. That's
it,
right.
And if it is the hand-me-down smartphone, there are ways of turning off the data.
Exactly.
So it's just the cellular
Exactly.
version.
So it's a great question, and I always turn it back. It depends on the family. It depends on the child. It depends on the child's maturity.
Right. Yeah. And I also think it depends on the parent.
And then also, do you recommend doing, like, specific ground rules?
Absolutely. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. From the
Before
very beginning.
Before they even get it.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And if I can add on that, it's not only the maturity of the child. I also ask parents, are you at the place where you're willing to invest in this? Because there is a huge time commitment on the parent. And if you're not willing to go through
the learning curve.
Right. If you're not willing to go through the text messages to get up to date with the popular social media apps, to learn the parental controls, if you as a parent are not ready for this, then it's not worth, you know, risking giving your child this. Now, one thing I do when I do a parent night presentation for my schools is I give parents a contract that they can use or not, and it's a technology one for computers and also another one for cell phones, and it pretty much
Perfect.
Gives this criteria that your child signs, that you sign, that any guardian or parent signs, and it pretty much says, this is my expectation, these are the 12 rules that you must follow, and you're going to sign this and I'm going to sign this, and then you lay out what are going to be the ramifications if you break the rules. The first time you lose your phone for a day, the second time 3 days, the next time a week, then fourth is until you prove yourself. And so what that does is it takes the fight out of the argument. So when they break that expectation and they break a rule, you don't have to argue or yell at them or tell them you're disappointed. You simply pull out the contract and said, if you want to be treated like an adult, we have to follow a contract like an adult. You broke rule number 5, and based off our signatures, this is something where I do have to take a discipline action and take your phone from you. So now they're not only recognizing that you have an expectation, but that there's ramifications that go along with the consequences of not using their device properly.
And those have been predetermined before the agreement was ever entered into.
Okay. Right, exactly. Right.
Can I add in too, is Absolutely. That what I find with for some families is that this works great, and in other families they want more flexibility in determining what those rules are. Mm-hmm. So they may include the child in mm-hmm. in crafting those
sure.
1 through 12.
Yeah.
And in doing that, it can create a little more buy-in for mm-hmm. for some
Give
children.
Some ownership.
Ownership
exactly.
over
right,
it. And or even just talking about it. If you have your set rules, even just having a conversation about, what do you think about number 1? Do you think this is fair mm-hmm. for you? Is it fair for me to ask this of you? So, again, this goes back to what you were saying, Brandy, mm-hmm. in the beginning about how it's all about the communication piece,
right.
really. It's all about establishing that connection with your kid. It's another opportunity to build that relationship that you have with them. So
I always suggest to parents that to have the contract is great, and then to revisit it, mm-hmm. almost like when you change the batteries in your smoke detector, bring out that contract and look at it again, mm-hmm. because the ages and the expectations
right.
of
They're
your children
change.
And
right.
the end goal is...
And their abilities.
All of it.
Yeah.
And their access, I mean,
right.
their interests, mm-hmm. all of it.
Yeah.
And so the end goal is for us all to be adults together and mm-hmm. to raise adults that go off and we're responsible citizens, we're responsible digital citizens. And a digital citizen is your ways that you interact in the online world. That's the
right.
way that you're a digital citizen. But when we're all adults together and you have this child that you have raised to be the responsible adult, they're responsible in the online world and in the real world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that takes time, effort, energy, dedication. Mm-hmm. It's not something you just hand over and hope for the best.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
usually
exactly.
you're not going to get the best.
Exactly.
If that's your plan.
You're listening to Central Coast Radio, and this is KCBX HD1 San Luis Obispo, KNBX HD1 San Ardo, and KSBX Santa Barbara. Our topic today is social media and youth, and my guests for today's show are Eileen Calandro, owner of Calandro Consulting, Leah Payne Scott, MPH and social and behavioral health educator, and Brandy Swain, crime prevention specialist with the San Luis Obispo County Sheriff's Office. And if you are interested in calling in and joining in on this conversation, or if you have a question, there are some experts here that can really take those questions and answer those for you. You can call us at area code 805-781-3875. Again, 805-781-3875. I want to say something that keeps popping into my head when you guys are talking about how it's not easier. And, you know, I think I have seen that there are parents that hand a phone to a kid because it makes their lives easier.
Oh, yes.
Rather
absolutely.
Than understanding that it's not about that. That, in fact, what you may find at the end of the day, your life gets a lot harder when you've got a child who gets into trouble with it, with being exposed to things that could be detrimental to them. So when you're giving someone a phone, you're really giving them a tool that they need to learn how to use properly. And mm-hmm. parents have to be more engaged, like you said, rather than less engaged. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that a lot of times we don't see.
Mm-hmm. It's challenging at the end of the day to make the time to go into the phone, or even as part of the bedtime routine, for the phone always getting docked in the kitchen or in a cabinet
right.
or somewhere, that it doesn't just go into the bedroom
Correct.
With the kids.
Or into the bed.
Of it. But I have taught families and talked with parents that are so dedicated to making sure their kids stay safe, they unplug the router from their computer at night and they put it under their pillow.
Yep.
So there are some parents that are willing to do anything to make sure that their kids
but isn't
are
that
doing
crazy?
The right
I mean,
thing.
I mean, it's a crazy world when first you have to sleep with your router, but.
She told me that and I just cheered for her. I said, good job, do what you need to do.
My daughter is one of these absolutely dedicated parents, mm-hmm. absolutely dedicated to, you know, the nighttime routine. They live in Texas, and going to her house and watching her with three kids, all of who had cell phones, it was exhausting.
Yeah,
truly exhausting. And
no
I just
kidding.
Told her, you know, I'm so glad I raised you in the era that I did, because if you were in this area and you were my child, I'd lock you in a silent room and that would be it. I would be one of those parents that, you know, I hope they would not find me. It's terrible.
I think you're not alone in feeling that way about parenting in this arena.
Something that I hear too from individuals, certainly for parents that are older parents that haven't done a whole lot mm-hmm. of the social media, mm-hmm. and maybe their social media is Facebook.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
Which is not
that
what our kids
is
are using.
No,
not
for
at
kids.
All.
It's so
not.
Let's talk a little bit about that, because I think a lot of parents. You know, there are kids, and I've got to say, my grandkids included, who on their Facebook page, they look a lot different
than yes.
they do on some of the other platforms that they're
right.
on. So
it's a good thing this is a radio show. No,
yeah.
I'm kidding.
So, but no, let's talk a little bit about Facebook really isn't the preferred app for?
Oh, no.
Okay, so yeah. What are some of the other options?
I would say when I do presentations at all the different schools in our county, and when you start getting comfortable with them and they recognize that your presentation's not coming from a judgmental aspect,
right.
but just a relatable, like, hey, I've seen this and I just want to keep you from getting in trouble, they start to open up to you. And I would say it's still fairly common that Snapchat and Instagram are our number two social media platforms that our youth are using from fifth grade to seniors in high school. And they will throw a ton of other apps, but always comes back down to these two. And Instagram, you know, you can definitely use parental controls on them. You can have a little more guidance and being able to supervise what's going on, where Snapchat's very difficult to police as a parent.
They can make calls on Snapchat and you can't even see who they're calling.
They can erase dialogues and it's very difficult. So I always warn parents.
And that's the appeal.
Yes, that once you open up that, you know, Pandora's box with the Snapchat, it's impossible to rein back in. So if you have a younger child and you haven't gotten to the point of allowing them to have that, one thing, you know, going back to what Leah was saying about ownership over what they do, you give the children an option and you just leave Snapchat out of it. You know, you could just say, hey, I know you want social media. I know this is a big thing that, you know, the kids are doing at your school. How about Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter, or any other app that tends to be a little more common?
Right.
So that way they feel like they have some ownership in it.
There's
and that they
inclusion.
Have a choice.
Yeah.
And then from that, then you as a parent have to be willing to learn that app frontwards and backwards, all the parental
Absolutely.
Controls, and either have the password to it or have an account where you're following each other.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you get to Snapchat and they've already started this, really from there, it's not so much policing Snapchat, which is impossible to do, but
right.
developing that character in your child that they're going to do the right thing when they're on this. And that's when I start getting into the conversation of long-term consequences. What effect is this going to have on you when you try to apply for employment, for colleges, or simply for your reputation, knowing that once this is done, it's almost impossible to undo.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. When we
I
talk about,
more.
You know, when you talk about the long ramifications mm-hmm. of what kids are doing or young people are doing mm-hmm. on their social media,
right.
give examples of what you're talking about. Because
right. I actually stole Eileen's phrase. I've been using it all my presentations.
Yay.
Instead of calling it a digital footprint, I've been calling it the digital tattoo.
Yep.
And
yeah.
it is. It's because can it be undone? Mostly, but it's going to be very painful and very costly.
And it'll leave a scar.
And it's going to leave a scar.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
so we have everything from examples taking inappropriate images, and that tends to be a huge trend right now on our school campuses. In fact, when I go to high schools, and again, once we get comfortable, towards the end of the presentation, I ask them, okay, so from freshmen to seniors on your school campus, what would you say the percentage is of young people sexting, either sending or receiving these naked images?
Yeah.
And for the past 7 or 8 years, at every high school, they would say 70% to 80% of the students here
yep.
do that.
Yep.
And is this a scientific study? No, but this is coming from their personal experience of what they're doing or what their friends are doing. And so then we get into the long-term ramifications of that. The fact that this is criminal, it's considered child pornography. This is something that a young person can get arrested for. And then not only that, we get into what's going to happen on your school campus. Are you going to get expelled or suspended if you, you know, get caught forwarding this? What happens to the person who's in the image who didn't give you permission to forward it on to a bunch of other people? You know, what's going to happen to them? Are they being victimized with cyberbullying? And I mean, there's so many elements to just one situation that occurred
mm-hmm.
that we really have to just look at every avenue and every consequence that's going to come from the single moment where they thought emotionally and not rationally.
Mm-hmm. Oh, exactly.
And,
yeah. Go
ahead. And I was going to say too that if you think about how immediate and fast technology is, sending or giving a mm-hmm. sexual image to a boyfriend when we were in high school required getting the film, taking the picture.
Right. Oh, and finding your camera.
Finding
right?
your
Where's
camera?
My camera? I don't know where
right.
my camera is.
Taking it to the store to be developed, and they
and
weren't
they wouldn't
allowed.
Develop,
they won't
right?
develop it.
Right.
So you've got to find someone that's willing to do it.
Right, and then you take the photo to your boyfriend or whoever you're interested. Like, think about how many times along that route you have the ability to use your upstairs thinking brain, rational brain, to say this isn't so such a great idea.
What's funny is in all of that, one step that you're forgetting is it never would have crossed our mind to even do it. This was not an expectation in relationships.
But you know, but you're so far removed,
right?
You know, there's an insulation. You're so far removed. I think when we're on a phone, on a video.
I don't think it's that we're removed. It's become so common. It's commonplace.
It's acceptable.
It's very acceptable.
It's
in fact,
big deal.
It used to be.
I have a picture of
right. Ten years ago,
I would have been appalled.
Right, and 10 years ago, when I started this presentation, that was my biggest hook: is what happens if this gets out, and it would mortify the students.
Sure.
Now, when I say that, they just go, "Oh well, everybody does it. It's not a big deal," and it's just they become so desensitized to how personal and private their body should be. They've lost a level of self-respect that maybe we're just not teaching anymore. That's not inherent in our family values. And so really, we got to find the root and not just try to put band-aids. How do we do parental controls? But really, what is causing our child to want to do this in the first place? And how do we remedy that?
I think it's the movement away from at exactly the time when the kids get the phone. It is the movement away from when your parent is the most influential person in your life to when your peers are.
Yeah.
And so if your parents have been saying all of these things for the past 13, 14, 15 years, but they're not the most important person anymore because your peers are, and this is what happens with the brain, which is what Leah has helped me to learn so much about, that then, well, if everybody, it's that whole everybody's doing it kind of thing. And so a lot of what can be done as a parent, I think, can become undone if the parent just kind of stops.
Even if it's
go.
Only
yes,
temporarily.
Exactly.
The problem is that those things aren't temporary. Those things can stay
and that's the
for
other
a
part
long
that,
time.
That kids can't comprehend at that with where the brain is and its stage of
the
development.
The longevity
of
it.
They can't understand that.
And in fact, actually, in adolescence, there's this sort of hyper rationality where they may know that something's wrong and they choose to do it anyway because of what's going on. And that's scary to parents when they hear that.
They can
like,
rationalize
oh my God.
It away, right? Isn't that what their brain is really good at that point?
Well, so there's changes in the dopamine reward system, which is what gives you this kind of feeling of pleasure. And in adolescence, you're looking for the like. You're looking for this dopamine hit. And so what feels good feels really, really good when you're in adolescence.
In the moment.
In that moment.
Exactly.
So, and then also, what I teach parents is that we think of the brain as in our skull, but we actually have a neural networks around our heart and in our gut. So you hear of like your gut intuition or your heart sensation, right? Heartfelt sensation. So what I teach parents is that they can have their children tune in, put your hand on your heart, your hand on your gut. When you're in a situation where you start to feel like something's not quite right, I'm not sure if I should do this, and really tune into the wisdom of those sensations, because they give us information. And our upstairs skull brain may be telling us, it doesn't matter, and I'm just going to do it, and this feels so good. But the wisdom of the body might tell us something different.
That's interesting,
And I think it kind of goes back to what Eileen mentioned briefly, was that these are conversations that we can't stop at a certain age. It's so much like the drug and alcohol conversation, which is you have to keep having that conversation as frequently as you need to just really hit that message home as to the importance of making sure that you're checking yourself and your behavior before you're posting or doing anything else. Yeah. We can't give up as guardians and parents and teachers and expect that with one conversation, with one lecture, I've given them all the knowledge that they need to make wise decisions.
Well, and they signed that contract.
Right,
so
they signed the contract.
They signed the contract, they got it. Right? No, it doesn't. Yeah. It doesn't stop with the piece of paper. Yeah. I tell parents that you want to be the Jiminy Cricket, and unfortunately, I think I need a new
Cricket.
Nobody knows
what
that is.
Okay, Disney. I love Cars, Disney. Yeah, but I need give me something more current. You can call in with that if you can come up with it. But what Jiminy Cricket is, it's your conscience.
Yeah.
And so we want to be that voice as the parents, not the nagging. I'm not saying that at all.
The
voice of reason, the snippet that you give to your kids, that nugget, you know, as they're going out. And they may choose, and I know I did, choose to ignore it. But it doesn't mean that I didn't hear it so many times.
Right.
But it's still there in your brain.
Oh,
it's
absolutely. There, right? Absolutely. So be that, be that voice.
And then think about all the kids who do listen.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
so
gosh.
and that's that element that we forget, is that we can say things a million times and we don't think that they're hearing us, but they're making decisions based off what we're teaching them in their youth.
Exactly.
So we have to recognize that what we say, it matters to them.
But
and
you
can't
what they observe
just
about
state
us too.
And our own behavior.
Oh my gosh.
Because adults behaving badly on social media.
Such a bad example.
Don't get me started. This is only an hour show.
I know. It's we'll see these young people who are posting images, and then you see the parents'
posting
account,
the same
and you're
images.
Like, I see where you learned this behavior.
You can't see my body language right now. I'm just holding my head because it's so true.
Right. This is Central Coast Voices, and I'm your host, Chris Kington Barker, on KCBX Public Radio from Salinas to Ventura and on the web at kcbx.org. My guests for today are Eileen Calandro, owner of Calandro Consulting, Leah Payne Scott, social and behavioral health educator, and Brandy Swain, crime prevention specialist with the San Luis Obispo County Sheriff's Department. And we're going to take a call right now from Robert in San Luis Obispo. Hi, Robert.
Hi, I have a quick comment and a quick question for you.
Okie doke.
So one thing that parents should know about the development of their child is that as the child develops, their brain is the last part that's developing, and the brain is not fully developed till you're in your late 20s or late teens, maybe even in the mid-20s. And the last part of the brain to be developed fully is the frontal cortex, where all the decision-making and risk-taking and executive decisions are made. So they need the guidance to help them make those decisions, because they may not realize they're doing risky behavior.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you, Robert. That's true.
And that comes from a book called The Teenage Brain, which is really interesting. And then my question is, do you see a trend going toward high schools and middle schools where they are asking for like phone-free school days, you know, where you're not allowed to have your phone on during school hours?
I'm seeing that and hearing that.
Yeah, there are some components to that I've been hearing whispers on both ends, wanting a cell phone free day on campuses, but also people not wanting that because of certain scenarios like active shooter situations where they feel they need the phone in order to call for emergency purposes or to be able to keep people updated. So it kind of, there is a debate on the necessity of it and whether it's better or worse for a campus environment.
One thing that I just heard about from the Screenagers email that I get once a week, which is one of the best emails that you can get into your inbox about what to do with your kids and technology. They have Tech Talk Tuesdays. And if you go to screenagers.com, you can sign up for it. And Leah and I presented the Screenagers movie to the community last year, and it was outstanding. And one thing that they suggested was make a contract or a promise with your children that you're not going to text them during the day. Mm-hmm. So that you're not part of why they are reaching for their phone and having contact. And it's really hard as a parent to not text something as soon as you remember it and just then scratch it off the list of, oh, I needed to tell my child about this or that, or there's this change. If you can wait until the end of the day and then send the text then the child doesn't have the opportunity to look at the phone because you're making them do it.
Right.
And a child feels responsible to, or obligated to respond to you because it's mom or dad. You know, so if you can make that promise to your child that I promise I'm not going to text you, if anything happens, I'm going to text you at the end of the day. It's a way to show that you respect the school, you respect the phone, you respect the need for them to be listening and present at school, but you also respect that there is communication that has
to happen. Yeah, that's a really good point, because what they've been able to show is that interruption with the pings coming in from phones.
That's the dopamine.
Is that trigger, you know?
Yeah.
Is that trigger for adults too?
Isn't it fun when it lights up and it's like, you know,
candy.
Just candy. And yeah. So that's a great question, Robert, and definitely something that schools are trying to figure out. And they just want to do the right thing for everybody involved.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for calling in, Robert.
I think that as a teenager gets older, especially in high school, they look like adults. They're developing. Their bodies like adults, but their brains are really not wired yet.
Yeah,
it's really important to give that latitude and remember that they can't think like we as adults do.
Right. And the other part about the adolescent brain, in addition to the prefrontal cortex not being developed yet, is that it's this period of life is the second most what we call plastic period of life in the developing brain. So plasticity is the brain's potential to change through experience. Okay, so the first 0 to 3 is the first most plastic when a child is just born until they're 3 years old. But the second most plastic time of the developing brain is in adolescence. So what does that mean? What means what we are exposed to wires our brains. And so if your child is spending 12 hours looking at their screen, it's going to wire their brain one way. And this is repeated experience over and over and over again, not just one day. If they spend 12 hours interacting and looking at someone's face and feeling empathetic and expressing and talking about life and exploring that way, it's going to wire their brain in a different way. So so the plasticity is important. And it's important to think about. Sometimes parents ask me, like, you know, how much screen time should my child have?
Right.
And my answer is, well, we can talk about that for your family, what works for you. But also, it's important to think about what they aren't doing if they're on their screen.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
And are they, you know, the importance of sleep.
Oh, my gosh.
The importance of exercise. There was a study that just came out in the Lancet Adolescent and Child Health Journal just, I think, a few weeks ago that was looking at how mental abilities of children are enhanced when there's 60 hours of physical exercise, 2 hours of screen time, and a 9 to 11 hours of sleep per night. How many of kids do you think get that?
It's not normal.
Not happy. Right? it's a high bar, but it's just something to think about. Also, the screens interfering with our sleep. So in a lot of families, we talk about turning off all media, you know, for the hour or 2 hours before bedtime. That's almost impossible for a lot of families who have kids in after-school activities, and then they have to go onto the computer to do their homework.
Right.
So
right.
It's a struggle. Mm-hmm. So anyway.
Yeah, no, absolutely good points. Mm-hmm. And thank you, Robert, for calling in with that question. I really appreciate that. So let's talk about, you had suggested that there was a website that you direct people to.
There is. There are several.
When you're doing your education.
Right, when
Brandy,
I do my presentation. Yeah. So usually when I'm talking to students, I don't make recommendations for websites. It's kind of, you know, defeating the purpose of
yeah, it's kind
the
of
presentation.
Like, yeah, that's your poison. Here's some
yes,
more
now
of it.
Go
yeah.
back online. So really, when I give tools, it's for the parents because that's where their guidance needs to come from,
yeah.
is from their guardians, their parents, and their teachers. So one website that I use all the time, it's called netsmarts.org. That's netsmarts.org, which is founded by the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. And what's so wonderful about this website, it's set up for law enforcement, for parents, and for the educator. Mm-hmm. And three different aspects of educating our youth. And it goes for all age groups. And so if you are listening and you have children who are between the ages of 5 and 7, well, your needs are so much more different than the parent of the 16, 17, 18-year-old. And they recognize that. So they're going to produce videos that are specific for your little ones to watch that allow you to watch along with them and to see this educational message and then open up that conversation. And it's very age appropriate. And they have games that you can play and different little, you know, interactive scenarios that you can do for this education purpose. Another thing is I always recommend our own website, slowsheriff.org, and we provide all these resources on our website, but we provide other elements like Megan's Law information on our online predators and sex offenders, and that allows parents to kind of just recognize what's going on in our own community. Mm-hmm. And sometimes people think that these huge issues are in a huge metropolitan area, and that they don't happen in sweet, quaint little San Luis Obispo. And even though our crime stats are much lower, the reality is it can happen anywhere. If you can plug into the internet, you can be a victim to a crime like this.
Right.
And so from our website, you can access a lot of this information, and you can also follow our Facebook account, where we post Most Wanted Wednesdays, and we put a lot of that information of, you know, our sex offenders who are, you know, in violation of their registration terms. And we could put that information out there just to kind of remind our community members of what's going on. And not that we're not in a safe community, because we really are, but we also don't want to live in this quaint county in a very naive sense. So slowsheriff.org, our Facebook account, and then netsmarts.org for that educational material.
Okay. Fantastic. We were starting to talk a little bit, Eileen, about parents mm-hmm. and them modeling their own behavior. So let's go ahead and talk about that, because that really does come into play. I don't know how real a parent would feel about really setting limits on a kid in terms of what they're doing or how they're posing, or and then.
Well,
look at their own
Facebook.
It's easier
to say, do as I say, not as I do.
Right.
Right? But we have two eyes and we're observing
right.
all of the time. And being a parent means that you have to be responsible. You have to set a good example. Mm-hmm. And it's not all the time, but sometimes when you're seeing a child behaving poorly online, sometimes you can look at the parents and
yeah.
see that that's what's happening too. One thing that I talk about with parents a lot, I give them guidelines. If I say when things go south, and that's when there's problems. And one thing that I tell parents repeatedly is, don't fight a battle for your child online. Sometimes I will see parents going in,
oh,
and I
yeah.
even have screenshots where parents will go in and say, "This is Michael's mom, and Michael said this, or Michael did this, or don't behave this way, and don't do this to my son." And I feel for Michael. I mean,
oh,
of course,
yeah.
it's you know, I'm just making up the name. But I also feel for the parent, too, because
right.
they just desperately want to do something. And
mm-hmm.
they want it to stop, but they just don't know mm-hmm. how to behave.
There was a recent thing that came in with an adult guy. Did you see this? I think this happened yesterday or the day before. His mother...
yes, with the he was
him
in the
too.
Yes, him too, and he responded back of, "Hey, here's me,
yeah,
and here's who I am, and yeah, mom, thanks for trying," kind of
yeah.
thing. Yeah, so
he incurred all kinds of rage
oh, absolutely.
From people
right.
because
well,
she posted him as a hashtag him too.
And interestingly, I
thinking it meant something
oh, yeah.
completely different.
Oh gosh, right.
Right.
Oh, like,
she thought it meant he's a nice guy.
I'm rubbing my eyes right now because I feel so much for everybody involved in all of it. It's so hard to not just step in it sometimes.
It is.
On social
media. It is.
As
a parent, I know.
And
for me, it really was.
And,
I'm sure it was for all
oh,
of you.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. It's hard. I tell, I teach a class. I taught a class for seniors, for older people. They didn't want to be called seniors, so I shouldn't call them that.
Mature.
Anyway, thank you. Mature
community.
Mature community. Thank you. And so, interestingly, I asked them what was the most helpful, and they said what was the least helpful was best behaviors online. And the mature population has a really hard time of knowing what's appropriate and what's not appropriate. And I kind of scratched my head over that. Of I really was offering that because I thought it could be so helpful. And then, you know, they're putting their phone number up on their Facebook account and saying, "Call me." Things like that, or posting pictures that they really shouldn't, and doing
right.
things, and so
saying where they're going when
oh,
they shouldn't.
Oh gosh, yes.
That they're going on vacation, they'll be gone for 3 weeks.
Yeah,
nobody's in my home.
Yeah, feed my cat.
All the lights are off.
I always tell a story.
Back door's unlocked.
One of my friends needed soccer socks. I tell this when I do an assembly, and I watch the kids, and their eyes just get huge. And I tell the story of my friend that needed soccer socks for her son, and put up on Facebook, "Hey, I need some soccer socks," you know, doing the all call. And of course, you know, 3 comments later, somebody said, "Oh, I have some." So my friend responds in the comments on Facebook, "Oh, great. Drop them by my house. Here's my address.
Oh, gosh.
I'm not home. Just leave them on the porch." Oh, And the kids that are listening to me just go, oh, and I say, but that just shows it's so fast and you don't even think about it.
It seems just like conversation.
It is.
And it feels just like you're having a face-to-face conversation. However, this is documented on the internet.
Well,
the
I think
world,
you make
world
a really, really good point, because what's happened is what's happening electronically has supplanted
exactly
face-to-face conversation for adults and for you.
And I do. I see it frequently when I go to the schools and I do these presentations, just the lack of eye contact or engagement. And, and you recognize it's because you don't need that when you're plugged in to your phone. And so, because we're going to see social norms starting to change in these upcoming generations. And the only way to combat it is to unplug or to reteach them social norms and behaviors around others.
Yeah, the social norms have really taken a shift. Mm-hmm. Yeah, when I go to restaurants and I see entire families, and I've seen multiple generations, and I'm talking three or four, all plugged in to some kind of electronic device, all the way down to the baby in the high chair.
It's so much easier to go out and just have everybody be on their phone.
And give somebody an electronic. And my thinking is, why go out?
It doesn't mean it's okay.
Order a pizza.
Yeah. I was at a football game, and there was a bunch of kids on the side at the end zone up on the hill, and I almost took a photo of it, and I thought
none of them were watching the game.
That might be bad form, so I didn't take the photo, but I can see it clearly in my head. None of the kids were watching the game.
Right.
They were all seated around, and every single one of them was looking down at a phone, and some of them were sharing what they were looking at, but the focus was the phone, or they were sitting there isolated by themselves. And there was rows and rows and rows of kids. It was like that was the spot.
Yeah.
Go sit there and go be on your phone.
But isn't that sad? I mean, for me, I look at it and it's fearful for me to see that, because you see people getting so removed.
And I try to keep the balance with that of what social media has done and the good that it can do and the power that it has, and the connection that it can bring. That can be very helpful for kids who really have a hard time, and it can be a portal when they just really wouldn't have the ability to talk or to be with people this way. So I try to hold that close, as well as knowing that it's important to put it down.
But the point is not to turn it loose.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're right.
If you just joined us and you want to hear this entire show, local shows on KCBX are on demand. And you can go to our on demand by going to kcbx.org and clicking on demand. It's very clever. And under the How to Listen tab on our menu, you select the show you want in the drop-down menu. We've been talking about internet safety, social media, and why parents need to be involved, and tips for adults of how to do just that. My guests for today's show are Eileen Calandro, Leah Payne Scott, and Brandy Swain. This show is live, and you're invited to join us. We have about 10 more minutes left in this show for you to call in. If you have thoughts, comments, or an experience you want to share, you can call us at 805-781-3875. Again, 805-781-3875. So I want to make sure that with 10 minutes to go, that we're really covering all the things that you want to get out to people that are listening. Because there are a lot of parents who are listening who, I'm sure, you know, want their kids to be safe. They want to be a part of that. A lot of them may not know how to do that.
Right.
So what are some of the steps that they can take now, even if it hasn't happened until now?
Right. One thing I know I like to talk about with parents is not only setting up boundaries, but giving your kids suggestions on how to handle a situation once they've been confronted with it. Mm-hmm. You know, a perfect example is you have a boy or a girl who's in a relationship, and they've been asked by, you know, their boyfriend or girlfriend to take a naked image and send it to them.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't want to just set the boundary of, I don't want you doing this, but also, okay, I don't want you doing this, but when you're put in this situation, these are different things that you can say in in order to reply back to that person and give them things like, you know what, I love you and I care about you, but this makes me feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So giving them those tools and those speaking points that they can make so that they don't freeze up in the moment and just cave to the emotion of what they're going through.
Yeah.
And so saying things like, I don't feel uncomfortable, or, you know what, my parents, they monitor everything I do online, so I can't do this, I'll get caught. Or just saying things like, I love you and I care about you, but I feel that if you love me and cared about me, you wouldn't put me in a position where I compromised my values in this way.
Yeah.
So if I can, you know, send any parent home with a message, it is create those boundaries, enforce them, but give them also the tools to how to handle a situation when you're not around and they're on their own and they have to stick up for themselves mm-hmm. and voice an opinion.
And one of the things that you mentioned before was the website netsmarts.org mm-hmm. because they have scenarios in there.
You know,
I went to that website and it's really got some excellent information and material on it. For, like you said,
right.
the different age groups.
You
can pull
right.
those scenarios off
right.
as a parent and
right.
just use those.
I'm a big believer in that muscle memory.
Yeah.
The fact that when you put them through that scenario,
right.
when they actually get put into that situation in real life, they're going to recall that scenario that
right.
you walked through, and it's
right.
going to become almost second nature mm-hmm. instinct to them.
When we teach critical thinking,
right.
that's the way that we teach critical thinking,
right.
is
mm-hmm.
to give youth the choices.
Absolutely.
And have them make those choices and then have them hear what some of the consequences are if they were to choose that.
Right. So it's like that stranger danger talk we have with our kids.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just don't talk to strangers, but then you follow up by saying, okay, we're in a shopping center and somebody comes up to you and tries talking to you. What are you going to do? So walking them through the situations, making sure that they physically and verbally are enacting what you think is most appropriate in that situation. So that way they'll be able to pull that reference when that time comes.
That's a great. And we're going to go to Kelly real quick. Hi, Kelly. Are you there?
Yes, I am. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you for calling in. Did you have a comment?
Well, yeah. So having a preteen and young teenager, we're a family that doesn't believe that a smartphone is necessary.
Mm-hmm.
So the old flip phone is just fine for us. However, I found that there are some teachers that she's encountered in the classrooms that actually encourage the use of cell phones for communication with them
right.
about homework assignments and sometimes even to look up information
mm-hmm.
while at school.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of puts us at
a conflict.
You know, we're not losing out in our education, but it's like, oh, there's the kid without the phone, or you don't have that opportunity to connect with the teachers like other children may have.
That's interesting.
So I just thought that was an interesting little side. You know, this is our how things are going.
Yeah, yeah, that's interesting, Kelly. Brandy, have you run into that when you've gone to the schools?
Yes, it's actually quite funny. There's been times where I've gone to a tech night at a school, and they'll do their entire, you know, intro on technology and making sure that everybody's got their email address and that they're using Google Docs to communicate and that they're emailing us when we need something. And then they have me come up and present. My whole message is, we need to unplug more. So I'm like, ooh, I'm like, you know what I was coming here to say, right? Mm-hmm. So there's that conflict in. And it's not a conflict. It's a balance. It's a balance in making sure that our children have the tools necessary in growing up in a society that's tech-based. So
exactly.
We can't completely unplug, but what we do have to incorporate is responsible use of these technologies. So there's going to be a fine line on how do we couple the two?
Yeah.
And so I think we're in that learning curve right now, and I think in the upcoming generations, we're going to see how well we did at that, how well we did at, you know, sending that message out there that we have to be safe doing this. In the meantime, here's that device that, you know, you're now taking home, and we're just hoping that you're using all the suggestions that we gave you.
Yeah.
And Kelly, I would encourage you to talk to the teachers. Just the way that you presented this to us was really factual, and I didn't feel like it was something that you were coming at in a combative way. I think if you voice all of that to the teachers and express your concerns, I think a teacher would want to know about that.
Okay.
Maybe I mean that I was a teacher myself, and if there was a student or in my class or I was doing something that had the element of exclusion, I would definitely want to be knowing about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I mean, it really hasn't presented an issue for us. I mean, it's easy, you know, to work around, or there's other ways to communicate to teachers. It's just one of those, you know, oh, by the way, or we're having an assembly on this fundraiser, so bring your cell phones so you can learn how to... You know,
right. No, I hear what you're saying.
Yeah.
It's a valuable tool.
I think what you're saying
balanced.
Too is that it's normalized. It's normalizing the use of cell phones at a young age.
It's encouraging the amount of screen time you're using, and that's the hard part. We're trying to discourage that, engage more socially, and the schools sometimes make that a little more difficult. So I think Eileen's on the right track. I think if maybe, and not even just you, but if there's a PTA group or a group of moms and parents, dads, who are willing to approach the school administration, just say, "Hey, I'm trying to decrease this amount of screen time because I feel like it's having an impact on their social skills and their ability to engage in just normal conversation."
Or even just open the dialogue,
right.
Kelly, you know, so that I can't imagine that you're the only parent in that school that has this concern.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
But you may feel like a dinosaur, but you're not.
Well, you think how long did we not have this technology in our schools and our education, you know,
and
still flourish?
People learned, right?
Right.
Yeah. So Kelly, thank you for calling in.
Thank you.
And best of luck to you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye. And we've almost run out of time here, so I want to thank my guests. Eileen Calandro, owner of Calandro Consulting, Leah Payne Scott, Master's in Public Health, Social and Behavioral Health Educator, and Brandy Swain, Crime Prevention Specialist with the SLO County Sheriff's Department. Next week, join host Fred Monroe as he speaks with Dr. Evelyn Zellerler, international facilitator, trainer, and founder and director of Peace of the Circle, along with Doreen Liberto, board member for Ecologists, as they discuss the foundation and invitation of circles and how the circle process draws on ancient and contemporary wisdom in a way that opens up a different and greater possibilities to create change. I think we all need a little peace sometimes. Central Coast Voices is sponsored by Action for Healthy Communities in collaboration with Community San Luis Obispo Community Foundation, and made possible by underwriting by Joan Geller Sargent. Your comments or suggestions for future shows are always appreciated. Please send them to voices@kcbx.org. I'm Chris Kington Barker. Thank you for joining me on Central Coast Voices.